Welcome to the Digging Deep ATV MX Podcast with your host, hailing from Kokona, Wisconsin, riding a CST Tires SSI Decals Valvoline Pack Yamaha YFC 450R, four-time ATV Motocross National Champion, number 25, Cody Jansen.
So you got to do all this different stuff, you know, in racing. You know, you got to race and freestyle, supermoto, all the stuff we touched on, all these different disciplines and everything in between. So what motivated you? Like, throughout all that time, what motivated you?
Girls.
What's up, everybody?
We're back.
I'm your host, Cody Jansen. This is episode 78 of the Digging Deep ATV MX podcast, presented by our title sponsor, CST Tires, available for purchase at shop.csttires.com. And tonight, we have another highly anticipated episode for you featuring an icon who acted as a face of our sport in the late 90s and early to mid 2000s. Dana Creech has done it all. He's the ATV version of Travis Pastrana. From a meteoric rise to stardom as a racer to pioneering ATV freestyle and sometimes doing both on the same machine at certain events, Dana Creech of Wavos fame, we've all seen the videos probably a few hundred times, was doing things that had never been done before. He's an absolute legend, and you'll hear his story on the episode ahead. This is our last episode before the 2022 ATV Motocross season opener at Daytona, so if you haven't done so yet, sign up now for season two of Digging Deep ATV MX Fantasy. Get in on all the fun by playing along with us. We have tons of great prizes to give away, including some fresh MSR full gear kits courtesy of Rocky Mountain ATV MC. So sign up today at atvfantasy.com. Let's quickly shout out all of our incredible partners. CST Tires, go to shop.csttires.com today. Yamaha, thanks to Blue Crew. Thanks to SSI Decals, DID Racing Chain, Namira Technologies, Bronco ATV and UTV Components, Impact Solutions, Launderville Steel Enterprises and Concrete Supply, the financial advice of the Haymauer Financial Group, Forworks Carbon, DP Brakes, Factory 43, Integrative Financial Concepts and their Safe to Race and Safe to Ride Insurance Programs, Binky's Forever ATC Museum, Evans Waterless Power Sports Coolant, and Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with code DIGGINGDEEP20 at manscaped.com. Their clippers rock, their nose hair trimmer is amazing, and the new Lawnmower 4.0 electric trimmer is next level. Outside the industry, sponsors are rare in our sport, so help us keep Manscaped involved with Digging Deep and ATV Motocross as a whole long into the future. Manscaped's signature line is the Performance Package 4.0, which includes the new Lawnmower 4.0 electric trimmer that I rely on to keep my beard on point, the best nose hair trimmer ever created, and an array of goodies like deodorant, boxer briefs, a travel bag, and more. So check out Manscaped. I wish I would have sooner. And get 20% off with free shipping by using code DIGGINGDEEP20 at manscaped.com. Support all these great companies that support us. And for any products that fall through the cracks, click that Rocky Mountain ATV MC banner on our website to help us out. The 2022 season is just about to begin, and we both know you still need parts and gear. No matter what off-road gear parts you need, Rocky Mountain ATV MC has you covered. But before you buy, simply click that Rocky Mountain ATV MC banner on our website. By using our specific link, we get a percentage of what you buy on the back end, enabling you to help us out while purchasing the parts you need anyway. And did you know that you can buy OEM parts from Rocky Mountain ATV MC? Yep. Shipped conveniently right to your door. So click that Rocky Mountain ATV MC banner at diggingdeepatvmx.com to help us out while satisfying all your gear and parts needs. You can also find our Amazon widget on our homepage. So same concept. Click that Amazon logo on the right side of your screen, purchase whatever your heart desires, and that will help us out down the road. We can't thank you enough for that. No new donors to shout out this week, but if you're interested in donating and hearing your name on the show, you can find the Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee donation links on our website. And major thanks to all of you who have donated. You guys freaking rock. Now, it's showtime. The 30-second board is up, it's sideways, and the gate is down. Time to dig deep with Dana freaking Creech right here on the Digging Deep ATV MX podcast. Let's go. All right, guys, someone pinch me because this is another one of those surreal moments for me here on the podcast. I've dreamt of making this conversation happen since the very beginning of Digging Deep, and today it's finally
happening. Brought to you by Bronco ATV and UTV Components, your hard parts and accessories source, specializing in electrical components, engine internals and cylinders, shocks and suspension parts, winches, clutch kits, valves, carb kits, bearing kits, and drives chain parts. Bronco ATV and UTV Components are available exclusively through distributors around the world. Visit your local dealer or online at broncoatv.com. I am proud to welcome an ATV legend, icon, and pioneer to the Digging Deep ATV MX podcast. Say hello to the one and only Mr. Dana Creech. Dana, it's an absolute pleasure to be joined by you, pal. I can't thank you enough for being here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Man, so I got to say, so for so many ATV enthusiasts my age, you know, we grew up watching and idolizing you. Your Wavo segments were iconic, whether it was racing or freestyle or free riding. It seemed like the camera was always on you. You were the Travis Pastrana of ATV riding and racing.
Thank you.
I'm stoked to dig into your story here tonight. So let's take it all the way back to the beginning. Obviously, we all have a starting point. We all have our first memories involving ATVs. So what is your first memory involving ATVs? Were you already riding at a young age?
Yeah, I got my first bike. It was a Trizinger 60, little three-wheeler.
Okay.
And got it for my third birthday. And I tried a race that year. And wasn't really ready for it. I did the race, but I skipped a section of the track because there was dirt bike ruts going through the center of it, and I went around it. Okay. And they gave every kid there, I don't know if my dad told them to do it or not, but they gave every kid their participation trophies or a trophy except for me. And that pissed me off so bad that I don't think I ever cut the course again after that. We took like a year off, and then I started racing.
Gotcha. After that. Maybe dad knew how to make it tick or whatever, how to motivate you a little bit.
Yeah, I still remember that.
Right. So you were out in California. Did you get right into racing pretty much right away?
We rode. We went to the beach. We live right by the beach. We'd ride out there all the time. And then out at this Ferndale River Bar place, we'd go ride. And we had a little track in the backyard, a little oval. I rode around the whole perimeter of our yard pretty much.
Okay.
As much as I could, but mainly that. We'd started doing flat track and stuff up in Crescent City, and didn't really do much motocross on the three-wheeler. Mainly flat track back then.
Okay. Yep.
Around a big oval, just wide open. I'd watch my roost, and that was my main crash. I'd be looking back at my roost, and I ended up hitting the outside and flipping into the fence and everything.
Oh my gosh.
Multiple times I wrecked watching my roost.
I feel like every kid goes through that phase, you know, like you're trying to, you know, you see pictures of people kicking up dirt. So you want to be one of those guys. So then tell me about your first four wheeler. When did that happen?
I got a Yamaha Blaster, I believe in the third grade.
Okay.
Got a Yamaha Blaster and started racing that immediately, and ended up moving up to like the 250 class, riding that in both the Blaster and the 250 class.
Okay.
And just kind of rode that till I want to say the seventh grade, I got a 250R.
Okay.
And then started racing that. That was really what started things, was getting the four-wheeler. The three-wheeler was more for fun, and I completely maxed that out. Every time I'd ride it, I'd blow it up towards the end. You know, we had it all modded out.
Okay.
And sure wish I could find that thing.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sure. It'd be sweet to have. But that thing was on its last legs every time I rode it. So the blaster was a game changer, and we kept it pretty stock. I had an LRD pipe and silencer on it, and I had a Works front shocks on there, no reservoirs, and I thought it was the shit.
Oh, trust me, I literally had an LRD pipe on my Blaster. Same thing. I feel like we all had Works shocks at one point, like your era, and then, you know, like my era, I feel like everybody had a Blaster at some point, so I'll always have a soft spot for my Blasters.
Yeah, they seem so small now that I get by them. It was so big back then.
I know. We got one to play around on, you know, a handful of years ago, and it, you know, it's a pit bike, but at the time it didn't feel like a pit bike, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So was it the Blaster, like in that era already? So you're, you know, seventh grade or whatever, like you said, sixth, seventh grade. Did you start to realize like you were good? Like, were you doing well at these local races? Or, I mean, tell me about that. Cause like, everybody's got an age where they kind of come to, and it's like, okay, I'm badass at this. Like I can really grab the horns with this. So tell me about that.
Yeah. I mean, I raced and I did all the sports and stuff, and on the blaster, and I ended up having to choose kind of what I wanted to do during that process, you know, if I wanted to do sports or racing and stuff. And I obviously chose racing over that. You know, I'd always skip a football game to go to a race.
Yep.
So I knew I was doing pretty good, and family knew I was doing good because I'd win the 250 class and my class. You know, I was beating those guys at the races as well on my blaster.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the natural step, was to move up to the 250R.
Gotcha.
Then we got that and started just slowly building that up. You know, I rode stock A-arms for quite a long time on that thing.
Right.
And finally got some Lager A-arms on it, and mm-hmm. had like a JP swing arm when I got it, I think.
Okay.
Got to keep breaking, kept breaking and breaking and breaking. We weld it. So it was same with the frame, just we probably had the strongest 250R frame you ever seen by the end of it with all the gussets and
right, yeah.
stuff on there.
Didn't flex at all.
Yeah, no, there wasn't much flex on mine. It was probably about 10 pounds heavier, 20 pounds heavier than stock.
But oh my gosh.
Dad just each year would have to rebuild the frame pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So at that point, like, did you end up going pro or whatever, like locally, before you ever made it to the nationals? Or I'm assuming like that's typically how the story goes from people from your guys there, especially out west there.
Yeah, it was Tavis Kane and I, we raced all that. Like after I got to 250Rs, Tavis came in.
Okay.
And, like, he wasn't there in the blaster days, but he came in on an LT 250 for a while, and then he ended up getting a Honda.
Okay.
And me and him battled it out, man. That was my main competition all through the amateurs, you know, but we race local pro
of course
all
yeah.
the time out there, but it would be me and Tavis, and then there'd be a huge gap to the rest of the crew.
Okay.
There was a couple older guys, Brandon Barnwell, who used to race the nationals, and he had a full Lager chassis that he would come to some of the races, but towards the end of our time there, he stopped racing. And
okay.
there's a Jonathan Jeffers who I don't think he ever did the nationals, but he had a full Lager. And he raced. I learned a lot from him, watching him ride.
Okay.
But he's the first one that told me that you had to land on the gas, because I kept wrecking. I'd be wide open down the straightaway, jump off the jump to the flats, and I'd land dead and just stick and end over end. It was so often. He's like, hey, it's like, listen to me riding out there. He's like, I got those tires spinning as fast as they can go before I hit the ground. And mm-hmm. that was a big changing point to my racing right there.
Just shows how green you were, you know?
Oh yeah. I didn't no guidance hardly at all on mm-hmm. that stuff. Cause mm-hmm. my dad raced motorcycles and three wheelers, but never,
sure.
they weren't really that into jumping. He always refers to Ronnie Mack. Every time he sees him, he's like, that's how we jumped. Just like that. Like, exactly how we all jumped. Just sky wheelie.
Right. Yeah. It's funny too. I often think about, like, there's guys like in our upbringing or whatever, who probably never made it to pro or maybe even local pro or whatever, but where they influenced you at a young age, maybe gave you a little advice or whatever. And like, still to this day, I mean, you become Dana Creech, you know, you're this world renowned ATV rider. And still it's like, you remember the little things that people taught you along the way. Like that just always sticks out to me. That's cool that, you know, there's people that helped influence you that probably have no idea that they helped influence you.
Yep. Yeah, it is pretty cool. Him and definitely Corey Ellis was a big inspiration always.
Mm-hmm. I figured that name was going to come up in this one.
Oh, yeah.
So then at what age did you make it to the ATV Nationals? I'm assuming that was like the next big step, you know, after doing stuff out there. And thankfully you had Tavis Kane, like you were sharpening your sword, you know, racing another really good rider all the time out there. But then, you know, I believe the story goes, if I remember correctly, after being a super fan of yours when I was younger, that you made the trek from California to Loretta's to compete in your first, you know, ATV National. And you must've been still a teenager at that time.
Yeah. I believe it was 99. It was our junior year of high school.
Okay.
We packed all our bikes in Tavis's trailer, and his parents drove out there with all our bikes. And my family, we flew out there and met him, because I was in school still. Mm-hmm. Met him out there, and we pitted. We didn't know what class we were going to ride. If we were going to ride B class or C. We didn't know.
Okay.
And we finally were like, well, I guess we should just go for it. We're out here. So we signed up for A class, and he signed up for Pro-Am as well.
Okay.
I just concentrated on the A class there. And that was the year Jimmy Elza won every race that year.
Okay.
He won every single race undefeated on motocross. I don't know about TT.
Okay.
But we came there. Nobody knew us from anything. We didn't know anything. I had a stock chassis with some A-arms on it. And
okay.
I think swing arm by that time. Mm-hmm. And I had a PP shocks on it.
Okay.
And we went for it. We ended up, I think, getting like fast qualifiers, and we won our pretty much dominated the thing. Tavis and I were running first and second in the main, and his chain broke, or we would have got first and second at our first race.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he was right there. We were both ahead of Jimmy. Like, Jimmy is, what the hell is last race? Jimmy got these two kids from California that came out. God, and we always give them shit for that.
Two kids come out, have no idea what they're doing, don't know what class they're going to race, and that end up upsetting the guy. That's as good as it gets. That's funny. I didn't know the Tavis Kane part of that, but I knew, you know, the story goes, and you can look up stories even online now where it mm-hmm. says, you know, that you come out of the woodwork, win your first nationals in the A class, and you won it pretty handily. So that's what dreams are made of. I feel like that story that everybody dreams of having happen. And so I was going to ask you about the year. So you said that you thought that was 99.
Yeah, it was 99 because I graduated in 2000.
Gotcha. So gotcha.
I raced the whole series 2000.
Gotcha. And that's what I was going to ask. I didn't know if that then opened the door. I didn't know if it was, mm-hmm. you know, you guys like saying, hey, like we could really make a mark here. Or I didn't know if it opened the door, you know, to like some sponsorship or support or something like that, somebody helping you get to the races. So tell me about that.
Yeah. Sean Cermini. I'm sure you remember Sean.
I do. Yeah, I do.
Sean came up to me there at the race, and he brought me over to Doug's trailer. Doug just won the championship.
Okay.
You know, Doug's obviously an idol. I was, Doug does.
Of course.
I got to have some of his championship cake there in the trailer.
Nice.
In his pit, and hang out with him and Sean and Nacarados. It was pretty awesome. He's like, well, you? He's like, you're with us, pretty much. And he made sure that he helped me get some sponsors. I think I hooked me up with Donnie Emler. Donnie was pretty much mm-hmm. one of my first sponsors there at FMF.
Yep.
Yep. Got some exhaust and everything from him. We ended up buying my dad's body shop sponsored me throughout the thing, made it possible. And we bought Doug's bike, one of the bikes they built for Doug there at NAX.
Okay.
Full Lager chassis, everything mm-hmm. with built motor, just turnkey bike that nice. We got. And, that's what I raced my A class year in 2000.
Okay. And then you ended up winning in 2000 as well, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I won most. If I didn't wreck, I won. I know Bardstown. In Bardstown, I wrecked. My bike went all the way down to the pond and I had to get up. I placed pretty good, but I didn't win it.
Okay.
And then the TTs, I didn't win a TT. I didn't know anything about it or setup. I was campaigning to get TT out of the series the best I could. Very anti-TT at the time that it had to be part of the series. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, Jerry McGrath doesn't have to, Ricky Carmichael doesn't have to do this.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. Just I didn't think it needed to be part of the national series.
I understand. Like,
both together averaging.
Yeah. Well, I feel like for so many people, they said, you know, that they had a second machine, right? Like during that era, mm-hmm. they'd have a second machine for TTs just set up for that. So if you're not a guy that had that, like, yeah, that made it a lot tougher. And I feel like for you, I feel like what made you so strong always, like you were so natural, like with jumping and stuff, but you're also like just willing to hold it pegged, right? And that wasn't necessarily what the best thing to do in TT was, you know?
No, the TT, really we struggled with too is there was usually a freestyle. I mean, it started at the first one at Danville, and we did freestyle and TT at the race, and I only had one bike, so we had to switch the bike over at night to back to motocross and everything so I could do mm-hmm. the freestyle show. And then all night long my dad and some of our friends, my cousin, uncle, everybody's there trying to put the bike back together, and we honestly didn't know anything. We got some tips from Keith Little and a couple of people about bike setup, but we still didn't understand any of it.
Right.
It was all just gibberish to us, you know, and I just, whatever I got was not from bike setup out there. That's for sure. A lot of lessons learned at TT.
That makes it that much more crazy that you were doing freestyle at the same time. That's unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. The first freestyle show, I believe, was at that Danville race, my first year.
Okay.
And Corey Ellis smashed that landing and flipped over.
Yeah.
That was the first one, or competition, not show.
Right, exactly. So at this point, like, who are you looking up to? I mean, obviously you talked about Doug, but who are you looking up to in the ATV industry and ATV racing, or in the industry in general? Maybe it's not just ATV stuff, but who was like your motivator, a role model, somebody like that at that time?
Well, obviously, Tim Farr, Doug, Shane, mm-hmm. Corey. Corey's one of the first ones I ever met.
Okay.
I met him at Seattle, Seattle Pace Race in 98 was my first stadium race I went to. I went up, just went up to one off race, and I met Corey. He was riding one of Tim's bikes or riding for Tim. I don't know if it was his bike or something, but he subbed for him at that race. And I got to talk to him and hang out with him for a little bit there. And like, that was huge for me to meet him. I ended up getting, getting to go out and do like a freestyle in the middle of it at that one. Cause I did some tricks during the practice.
Okay.
So Dan Allen and them came and asked if I wanted to go out and do some tricks. Me and Johnny Hale.
Okay.
Went out and did some tricks at intermission out there on the track.
Oh my gosh.
They actually had some big jumps back then, some triples and stuff. Like, it was pretty cool. And yeah, we did that. I ended up not doing good in the race. I don't remember, like eighth or something. I don't remember the exact score, but I got to do the show. I was proud of the freestyle stuff.
So was that an interest of yours from the very beginning? Like the freestyle and tricks and stuff like that? I mean, we're obviously going to get to that, but I didn't know that it was going to come up this early in the story. So must have been an interest of yours from the very beginning.
Oh yeah. Like me and Tavis always rode together. We had a little track at his dad's shop that we'd always ride on. And we had this jump right in the middle and we would sit there and kind of play pig. What with tricks, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Like basketball pig, you know, you're shooting.
I do.
And yeah, one guy would do it. The other one have to try and do it kind of thing. And it just escalated big time for us. You know, we always doing it. And then our races, if you won, you'd end up doing a hill clicker or something, no footing can.
Okay.
Always trying something, you know?
Okay. Well, so then it worked out perfectly, or maybe you were part of it that, that started the ATV freestyle thing. Cause prior to your era, there was no such thing. And I believe the story goes that you won the first ATV freestyle competition. Am I right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I thought. So that must've been at that first race that you were just talking about.
Yeah. I think we won most all the ones we went to.
Right.
On those, it was a few of the TTs, and then we did one at Kentucky. At I can't remember the track. It was an amazing place where we had that Rockin' and Racin'. You remember that?
I do. Yeah,
John
I do.
Pellen.
I do. Yeah.
We did it over the bridge. We jumped over the bridge there at the announcer's tower. And
okay.
I think that was about the last like contest that I did.
Okay. It seemed that it worked out, the era, the time period, everything worked out perfectly so that, you know, something you really loved to do was right in line with your career path, basically. Like your career was at its peak when freestyle was a thing. So at what point did you realize, or I guess maybe the best way to frame this is like, what was a priority at that time? Because, you know, you're racing and competing freestyle at the same time. What was the priority?
Priority was always racing. I'd get in the best shape of my life. Mm-hmm. And then if something would happen, I'd get hurt right before the season or something and have to fight through injury the whole time.
Okay.
That was my biggest part. I mean, I was never known for my conditioning ever, you know, I could put in a fast lap. I'll get fast lap or do a technical section, but I was never like the only times I was really, really ready. I ended up getting hurt.
Sure.
Just something stupid on practice. And it was never really on freestyle other than right at the end when, you know, I'll tell you about at the end of this, but 2009 or something when I really got hurt bad doing freestyle.
Yeah.
But, all throughout it was mainly just practicing. I'd have bike failure cause we're riding so much that something would happen and break a leg, break an ankle. I had a stupid one on a 50 where up at Tavis's went off and the throttle tube was loose. The throttle tube came off and landed in like surfer position, broke my ankle like a month before the series started. Yeah. I went to one national, the opener national pretty much in Kentucky, and Dustin Wimmer's dog. That was probably the best shape I was ever in was this one. Dustin Wimmer's dog came over to our pit and started fighting my dog Moto. And I was trying to break him up. And one of the dogs, I don't know which one, I thought it was his, bit me right here in the hand. It went all the way through my hand.
Oh right my there. Gosh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that right story.
Right at the race. And that was, I was probably in the peak condition at that point.
Sure.
And yeah, it was horrible for me that one. And I had to fight through that injury, you know, riding with rubber glove and gauze and stuff.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
And they wouldn't sew it up because it was a dog bite. You know, it ripped the whole palm of my hand. There's right here, a big one, and then it went all the way through right here.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was just foobar.
Man, all the way through. That's crazy. So, I mean, I don't know what you were telling yourself at the time. I know if it was me, I'd tell myself that this happened, I don't know, to avoid some bigger injury or something. Like there's always some greater power, right? That's saving me from something, but man, that's gotta be a tough pill to swallow still to this day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know. You remember when I got heat stroke in Georgia? Do you remember that one?
I do. Yep. I do.
That was at an opener. Well, I was sick and got heat stroke and ended up blacking out on my bike all the way around the track, and I had to be on the handlebars, and then I come up and jump the jumps, hit like a cameraman or two, and then I ended up getting stuck on the last lap and got off to push my bike and collapsed over it, and I grabbed my header on the 450 when I was passed out and just melted my hand there to where it was ruined. I had to go through that for the next few races, and then ever since then I've always had heat problems. Loretta's, I had to get treated there one time. I had to pull off because I was blacking out and everything, and they brought me down to the river. That's about 3 years later, 2 or 3 years later.
Jeez. Yeah. But that's nothing to mess with, because heat stroke will kill a guy, you know, like Josh Lichtel, right? Like tips over dead at Redbud. That's nothing to mess with, especially when it happens at Etchikani, you know, like you talked about there in Georgia. I mean, there's no worse place on earth, I feel like, as an ATV racer to have it happen than there.
Yeah, and I had to stay in like the emergency room for what, a week or something.
Oh my gosh, took a while
to get out of there, because bring all your enzymes, your liver and kidney enzymes back up to the right numbers, because like they were like at zero kind of thing.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible. Yeah. I didn't know all of that, but like I said, I think the only way a person can get through that is by saying, hey, like this happened to prevent something worse from happening or something, right? Like we're all on this path to, I mean, I don't know how else a person justifies it, right?
Yep. Yeah, it just luck, I guess, it just happened. Everything happens for a reason.
Everything happens.
And it's not that I didn't want it. I always wanted it. I always tried and stuff. I just, I definitely could have conditioned more. That's my biggest thing, I'd say. You know, the times I did it, I got hurt. And it was like kind of disheartening. Like I'd lose motivation from that.
Right. I feel like that's one of those things though, that even at the time, like it's hard to see it when you're in the middle of it. And then later on you realize like, hey, I should have, you know, maybe I should have just done a little more, but at the time you're feeling like you're doing everything right. Like you weren't at that time, you weren't thinking you were cutting any corners or anything like that. It's something that you realize later, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I can definitely look back and see it. And I don't know. I had a good time. I had a good time race. I wouldn't take none of it back. Not even the injuries. Like everything turned out really well with everything. You know, I wish I would have won a national pro championship.
We'll get right back to the show, but now a word from our sponsors. And thank you for listening to these ads. Without these great companies, none of this would be possible. Show your support for the people who support us. Welcome to the team, two-time champ Joel Hetrick, who dropped the biggest news of the offseason when he announced his move to CST Tires. The CST takeover has been gaining momentum over the past several seasons, and now Joel Hetrick and his Phoenix Racing teammate Jeffrey Rastrelli are the most recent additions. The Pulse MXR tire has helped lead riders like Thomas Brown to race wins and three consecutive Quad Cross of Nations titles, Nick Janusa to the Pro Class podium, myself Cody Jansen as I rode my Pulse MXR fronts and white label soft compound rears to back-to-back national championships in the Junior 25 Plus class, and the most recent additions have us thinking a Pro Class national championship is on the horizon for CST tires. The Pulse MXR tire, available in soft and standard compounds, offers the highest level of traction, most predictable cornering, and superior wear characteristics when compared to the competition. Visit shop.csttires.com to join the CST takeover today, or prepare to be beat by someone who did. Joel Hetrick, Jeffrey Rastrelli, Nick Janusa, myself, and so many others are believers in CST tires. Are you? CST Tires, where passion meets the ground. You already know we're Team Blue Crew here at the Digging Deep ATV MX podcast. Whether it's second all-time winningest, seven-time and reigning ATV MX Pro Class National Champion Chad Weenan, or six-time and current XC1 Pro ATV GNCC National Champion Walker Fowler, it's clear the podium-proven Yamaha YFC 450R is the winning choice of sport ATVs. This unprecedented success for the YFC 450R, its unrivaled quality, quality and performance, and the undeniable fact that Yamaha is the leading OEM supporter of ATV racing has created a Yamaha takeover within the sport quad market. Better yet, Yamaha's Blue Crew Racer Support Program is back and even stronger for 2021, meaning Yamaha riders are about to cash in on higher payouts and more prize opportunities, including a chance to win a brand new YFZ450R. For more info, head over to YamahaBlueCrew.com, follow them on social media at Yamaha Outdoors, and check out Yamaha's full proven off-road lineup at YamahaOutdoors.com today. SSI Decals is a name synonymous with ATV racing, synonymous with big time success, and absolutely synonymous with the best looking decals around. An offshoot of their parent company that was established in 1947, SSI first took shape from owner Ian Harris's passion for ATVs. With what started as just making numbers and decals for riders like Chad Weenan, the company quickly took off, and today you couldn't imagine ATV motocross without SSI Decals. The graphics maker and designer now supports all the top teams in ATV motocross, as well as teams and riders racing GNCC, Work Series, Pro Motocross and Supercross, Canadian Pro Motocross, Short Course Off-Road Trucks, UTVs, Snowcross, and oh yeah, six-time NHRA World Champion Clay Milliken. No project is too big or too small for SSI Decals, making your identity stick with championship-level graphics. Head over to SSIDecals.com today and then maybe call the doctor because things are about to get sick. The Digging Deep ATVMX podcast is brought to you in part by DID and their wide range of championship-winning chains. From the street to the track and everywhere in between, DID chains are designed to give you the optimal riding experience with great performance and increased chain life. Consistent to the core, pick up your box of reliability today. DID, what drives you?
We are proud to be partnered with Numira Technologies. Since 2001, Numira has led the charge in the ATV and side-by-side market, covering more applications than anyone else in the industry. Numira's advanced piston technology uses a NASA-exclusive aluminum alloy that helps to reduce expansion rates, that allows for tighter tolerances, and leads to higher overall engine performance for your machine. For more information about Numira's wide offerings of pistons, rings, gaskets, and industry-leading top-end repair kits, visit your local dealer or online at www.numira.com. Numira Technologies, pistons with an attitude. We are pleased to be partnered with Bronco ATV and UTV Components. Bronco has been an industry leader in replacement hard parts and accessories for all makes and models for over 15 years. With a catalog that includes a full line of electrical components, engine internals like rods and cylinders, all the way down to suspension parts and bearing kits, Bronco is your hard part source for whatever you need for whatever you ride. Available exclusively through distributors around the world, visit your local dealer or online at BroncoATV.com. 4Works Carbon's innovative lightweight products include top-notch seat covers, carbon fiber, and plastic hoods, gas tank covers, exhaust shields, shock guards, and much more. Whether you have an ATV, UTV, or snowmobile, 4Works has the goodies that will improve your ride and make you salivate. We trust 4Works for increased function and a sexier look, and you should too. 4Works Carbon, always working hard to bring high quality and innovative parts to the market. Check them out today at fwcarbon.com.
Obviously there's things you wish you would have accomplished, but I think a lot of people would take your career over, over their own, Dana. So I feel like, okay. I feel like you're doing good there. So freestyle, did it come easy for you? Was it natural? Tell me about that.
I mean, I just love doing that. That was fun. I loved putting on a show, getting the crowd riled up. Like that was
okay.
That was kind of my thing. Like I love that. It was kind of showed, I bet, but
okay.
I wouldn't say I was better than anybody else. I just did better at a lot of the ones, you know, luck might have been there or something. Mm-hmm. We were ahead of our time at mm-hmm. that time.
Yeah. Well, I can see how, you know, being a professional racer as well, probably felt like there was no pressure doing the freestyle thing. I would assume like that's just riding. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The freestyle was fun. Mm-hmm. Really fun. Definitely no pressure for the training and all that stuff. Like mm-hmm. didn't really practice it. Mainly just did it right at the shows or when we were filming with Wes. That was about it. You know, we practiced back in the day, but after that, we just, not like they do now, there and go out, practice a couple hours every day.
Right.
Definitely didn't have that back then.
Were you watching what the dirt bike guys were doing and then saying, hey, like I can emulate that, no problem. And then going and busting it out or how did you like, what was that a motivation at the time?
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely watch, you know, Metzger, Pastrana, all those guys like, Metzger was always a big influence. He was one of my favorite. I always had a picture of him doing a trick on my wall in my room all growing up, you know.
Okay.
Metzger's the man. I just, you know, Travis too, but obviously Metzger was way before him. His style, I loved his style and stuff, and end up becoming good friends with Mike. He's a good dude.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And the stuff that you were pulling on an ATV at that time was completely unseen. Like, I feel like people were, you know, they couldn't believe what they were seeing, the stuff you were pulling at the time. And that was the start of a, you know, a new era for ATV enthusiasts,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was, you know, it was something that no one's ever seen and no one could do yet. Mm-hmm. That was kind of always been my favorite thing, is doing something someone can't do.
Right.
If I could do that, that was a goal. Even at the track and the races, mm-hmm. I would try to do a rhythm that no one would do.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. That was my thing. Other guys would line up there mm-hmm. to watch during practice, and I'd just go by and kind of flip them the bird and not even ride it after I'd try it once.
Right.
They'd try to watch it. And that was like a fun part for me.
I was going to say that's why everybody watched you, you know, that if it was doable, you were going to be the one to do it. So, I feel like that's why all eyes were on you at all times. So with Wes, so when did you get connected with Wes Miller? Because I feel like that was such a huge part of that whole thing. And obviously the rise of freestyle, and then you kind of being the face of that whole thing. I believe that Wes had to be a part of that, and that powerful alliance that you guys had, because, you know, with Wes's support and the exposure that you got from the H-Bomb film stuff and all the Bomb Squad events, you became a legit celebrity in the ATV industry. I remember, at least the way I remember it back when I was younger, like, you were the face of ATVing in general, not just ATV freestyle, not just ATV racing, but like ATV everything. You were the guy at that time. And I believe that, you know, Wes had to be a huge part of that.
Yeah, no, I can't thank Wes Wift. I wouldn't got near the exposure, you know. Mm-hmm. Wes definitely helped me with so much and getting me in with people and just getting me out there the way mm-hmm. we did it. You know, we worked together, you know, I'd help make his movies better, but he would help get me out there and make me more popular for sponsors to make more money mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So it really worked hand in hand. I ended up meeting him at a Anaheim pace race.
Okay.
One of the first ones I did on the Nax bike that 2000 year. Mm-hmm. I was in a last chance qualifier racing Keith Marks. I remember it still. I won the last chance qualifier and did a hill clicker over the finish line.
Okay.
And Wes ended up coming up to me in the pits out there to my trailer and introducing himself. And I obviously knew who he was for sure.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have pictures of meeting him. My mom was back there snapping pictures of it. Nice. But yeah, he came up. He's like, I want to do stuff with you. You're like, we're going to do it pretty much. And we ended up scheduling a couple shoots, went to Beaumont and out to Glamis. Those are the first two shoots we did together. And kind of history from there. Like I would go wherever I could to get promoted more, you know.
Like, yeah,
you know, if you're filming, I'll be there,
right,
kind of thing. And that's what really skyrocketed me, because I went from nothing to mm-hmm. in the scene big really quick, mm-hmm. you know, that wave, the first wave. Also, I was in most of the segments because I made sure I was going to all of them, you know.
And one of the questions I had for you was if the freestyle stuff took away from the racing at all, but you kind of already said, like, other than, you know, maybe an injury here or there, the freestyle didn't really take away from the racing, even though the racing was priority.
Yeah, racing was priority. It just I'd say the TTs it took away from it until I got a separate bike.
Okay.
You know, on the next team I had multiple bikes mm-hmm. after that, you know. Mm-hmm. Had TT bike, and then during that era we didn't have to do it anymore, and I was like, peace, have fun, Shane.
yeah
I mean, I would go back and do TT now, it seems real fun, but when I had to have it be part of the series, it bummed me out, like, because I wasn't good at it and I didn't know about it. They had so many years of experience,
right?
You know, that was the main thing. I thought they should be separate the whole time.
Well, I feel like that those older guys are the guys that really shined on the TTs too, you know. They had done it forever. Those are the guys that you didn't want to mess with on TTs. So at what point, I guess I didn't ask you this already, but at what year did you go pro, Dana?
I did 2000. I won the A class, and I went 2001 was the first year.
So you went right away. So you went from just a little bit over one season as an amateur mm-hmm. on the national scene and went right to the pro class. So what was that like, lining up against guys that you obviously were idolizing right away, basically? What was that like?
It was definitely my goal my whole life. Like, that's what I wanted. Like, I just wanted to race those guys. You know, I knew I had to do the A class to learn and get the sponsorship up and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was excited. I was super excited. I wish I would have known more about training and stuff back then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I moved right out of the 2000. I was in high school still. We flew to every race and I had people take my bikes and their trailer, and we paid them to haul our bikes to everything. We'd fly in and get them ready when we get there. And 2001, I moved as soon as I got out of high school to Nashville, and we started that was when the NACS semi started. Mm-hmm. Was that year. And
yep,
I don't know, it was a lot for an 18-year-old, I'll tell you that. Like, being on my own and everything, like, I probably could have concentrated more on racing than some other things. Like, I just wanted to, I was out there, I was on mm-hmm. my own.
Yeah,
girls, all that stuff, you know, you get distracted a little bit. So I'd say I definitely started concentrating more after that year. That year was a big experience.
It's funny, at the time where a person feels like at 18, you feel like you're an adult, and then you think back and then you like see pictures of yourself back then and you look like a sixth grader, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got my first cell phone that year when I was in Nashville.
Okay.
Like, I was a kid.
Oh, that's funny. So how many years did you chase Nationals uninterrupted, basically?
Until WPSA started, and I stopped the national. I did a couple nationals after that.
That's exactly what I thought.
And there, and yep. that was it. I thought the WPSA was where it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously messed up on that one.
I think everybody.
It was
did.
Really cool. It was a really cool thing for quads back then. We got so much exposure, and mm-hmm. there were so many promises made to us from that. And you know, we were able to get so much more in sponsorship because of the TV time. Like, that was just where it was at
mm-hmm.
right then. And you know, definitely didn't see what was, I thought it was just going to progress and progress from there.
Mm-hmm.
And the UTVs came in, I saw those rhinos and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's what we're all going to be doing right there. Like,
yeah.
So I transitioned during that WPSA mm-hmm. time to UTVs.
Yep.
And, just kind of got fed up with some of the stuff going on in the politics mm-hmm. there in 06.
Yep.
And, I believe it was 06 or 05. And I just, decided to do California races, ITP quad cross
mm-hmm.
and do more UTV stuff with Rhinocraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that so vividly. That was 2006. And yeah, I feel like the WPSA, I mean, nobody's to blame there as far as like the way that, you know, you made the wrong call, because everybody made the wrong call. Everybody thought that mm-hmm. that WPSA was going to be the future. And I tell people too, like, you were a pro at that time in 2007, when I was racing, you know, the WPSA title, the WPSA championship, they baited us in because, you know, we saw six or seven or eight semis worth of pros, right? And guys that mm-hmm. I was racing with that on the local level, even though I was a youth rider at Nationals. So I'm like, I'm a couple of years away from having like a decent ride, right? So we got baited in mm-hmm. to, you know, this dream, and, you know, spending, thinking that there's going to be this, you know, this golden goose at the end of the rainbow. And, yeah, there was none there, obviously. You know, there's people that are still trying to make that dream come true today, because it didn't happen then. You know, it was not there to be had, and that's a shame.
Yeah, it was bad for quads in general, that whole thing, just because it split it. Mm-hmm. You know, you had people racing the Nationals only, a couple people milking that, mm-hmm. and most of us were over here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it kind of ruined it. That's what was the downfall of ATV racing, is the way I see it, that made it just kind of simmer out, it seemed like, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like it's picking up again now with all these guys, but you know, we used to have to qualify for every race, you mm-hmm. know, back then.
Yeah.
And there was fast guys, you know, and then it just got, you know, I've looked at the gates last few years and it's not even a full gate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just seems like it did that to the Nationals when we were racing WPSA. It was a half gate of people that you didn't even know.
Yeah.
On it, and then a few guys out there that were racing both series that could figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I was all in on WPSA. I did one national during that. It was a Unadilla, and I qualified. I saw the start, like, we almost died on the start, because it was like a mm-hmm. inside comes in like this, outside's already coming across, and you just jackknife you guys. And then I was like, it's not even worth it. I was like, I'm just gonna watch. And then Jeremiah got in his wreck right then in front of me. I was standing right there watching it, and it was exactly why I didn't even race it. It was because I saw how dangerous that start was. That was kind of like a turning point for me watching that all happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that sometimes that happens, right? Like you see things, you see, you know, you have whatever, something happens, some event happens in your life or in at the racetrack, and you decide like, hey, not worth it anymore, you know? And thankfully, you know, you were able to get out of there. I mean, a guy that had, I mean, think about all the wrecks you had, the crashes you had, the stuff that you got out unscathed. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, to get away and be sitting here with me today and be, you know, able to do whatever you want in life. I mean, that's an awesome thing. So how does your body feel today? You know, like I said, you had a lot of wrecks old. And stuff. So old,
old body. Yeah, definitely put a toll on it. My shoulder's the worst thing right now.
Okay.
I ended up hurting it filming last year, and I got to have shoulder surgery right now. That's my worst thing I got.
Okay.
I think it's a rotator cuff or something in there, but it's jacked up. It still lets me ride though. That's like the only thing. It doesn't really hurt.
Okay.
But, you know, if I put my elbows on the counter, can't hardly pick my arm up off the counter without helping it.
Ugh.
But riding still feels good. I haven't rode a quad with it, but dirt bike I just rode last weekend at the track, and it.
Okay.
I didn't even notice it.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, that's good. Mean, that's good. That's a good trade-off, Dana.
Yeah. Yeah. For all the shit I went through, that's pretty good.
Right. We got a bunch of questions about your worst crash ever.
Oh, that's easy. That was at Bardstown, Kentucky, where my needle clip broke in the practice. We were at a freestyle show when you guys, you know, 360 you guys were showing. It was right after that. Mm-hmm. I think we did two practices that day, and the next practice we were going out, and it was at 90 feet, and we'd hit it in fourth gear on the 250s. And you come up and be like, bop, 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 up the takeoff, and bop, 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 whoop, whoop. And ended up breaking the needle clip on that carburetor there, and I had to jump off peak. Mm-hmm. And I made it to the landing on top with like 1 foot, and then right to my ass, and ended up breaking my tailbone, my ankle, and three vertebrae right in this area, right, T8, T9, and T10, okay. Compressed them. And that was by far my worst feelings, you know, other than the last crash on a quad. That one was probably the scariest one. I wrecked at Wes's house when we were filming Huevos 11, the bomb shelter thing.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up following Colton off the ramp, did great, came around to do it again, and I was nose high, clipped it and sent me right to the bottom. Then the quad landed on me and just, I went with it. I ended up waking up to them telling me I have compound fractures, which I didn't. They were just bleeding so bad they thought the bone was sticking out.
Okay.
And Caleb and Wes had to take my leg that was up here behind me facing out. I was laying on it. It was my hip dislocated, and they pulled it around straight while I was knocked out. And that was right there with the back breaking one. And it took a lot longer to heal up.
Oh, my gosh.
And still a little bit bothers me, that one, like just to tighten the hips up. Mm-hmm. There was always popping out for a while. It didn't have any movement for at least a couple months. I kept going back to the emergency room telling them, like, something's wrong, guys. Can't move my leg. It was pretty well paralyzed there in the whole area for a while because it just ripped everything out.
Jeez.
Of the growing and stuff. Yeah, it was really bad, but
yeah, that's
still horrible. Lucky. Everything works. I ride. I have fun still. I get to play with my son.
Yep.
So
that's all that matters.
I'm happy
right?
with that.
Yeah, that's all that matters. You know, talking about that Bardstown, Kentucky crash that came right after that, you know, the 360 thing like you talked about. And I was actually, I saw that video earlier today, the crash there. And it was hard for me to watch, man. Like it still to this day is hard for me to watch. Just seeing, thankfully, like you're moving, you know, you're moving. So, you know, everybody knows you're not paralyzed, but you could just tell like the tone of your voice or whatever, your screams, your yells. It's hard for me to watch because you can tell how much pain you're in, you know?
Yeah. I mean, really I always do the limb check when you wreck.
Of course. Yeah.
Chest, everything, make sure it goes. But
right.
It was my tailbone. My butt took so much trauma when I landed there. Like I was bruised from up above my waistline all the way to the back of my legs, all the way around from that. Like it was just horrible, that the tailbone part, the way how much trauma that got.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just, that hurt way worse than the back because the back took longer to heal.
Sure. Yeah.
And it just that hurt.
Gosh.
And the landing was just cement. a bike landed right under the back of it. So if I was stayed on, I'd have been really bad. I took the best moment and bailed and made it to the top, luckily. And it ripped the arms out of one side of the bike completely, right out of the frame. Yeah. So out of a leg or frame. So it wasn't a stock one or nothing.
Right. That's unreal.
Yeah, it was bad. They had to take me. I was on a backboard for 13 hours there. They took me to that hospital, which they did CAT scans and stuff, and they ended up not being able to do anything. So they sent me to the University of Kentucky in Louisville, which they didn't have a helicopter that time. So they took me in an ambulance all the way to Louisville from Bardstown. Oh, I was still on the backboard with the neck brace taped to it. I had to have my hands under my butt, keep it up off the thing because it hurt to have my butt touching the board.
I'm sure. Yeah. So,
yeah, it sucked.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
I remember all that.
Okay. Yeah. We don't need to remember that anymore. So, move on. We'll move on to a little happier things here.
Yeah,
we'll get into some of our listener questions a little bit. We were just talking about the famous, 360 spin on the landing there. I don't know what you call it, but we predictably got a zillion questions about that thing. So people wanted to know if it was like if that was a one shot deal or if that took a lot of practice to hone in on that thing.
I'd been practicing it for a while, and that was the first time ever sticking it completely around. Actually, that's two different shots. That the one that's all close up from behind, that one I wasn't making it. I was going down. It was like a three-quarter, but the one from the other side where I'm coming straight at you, that was the one I made it all the way straight,
all the way through.
Two different, two different shots there. Just nobody really lined up the whole thing together other than that one shot.
Okay.
I did it. I've done it quite a few times after that. I don't know why West didn't use it, but I was doing it on my Walsh bike which was a lot harder to do it on, or something. And it was probably a little heavier. But I did it at Massachusetts. We were at John Chandler's place out there doing it, and I was doing it off the landing there. And I don't know what happened to that footage. Wes could probably answer that one. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, for sure.
I did it anytime I could build a thing to do it. I was always playing with that trick. So I wanted to actually do it in the air without pivoting. That was kind of the whole goal. I always told Mike I wanted a 250F, a light 250F to try it on. Now he's making them.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, they're out there now. It's just crazy. It's crazy. The more you watch it, like the more I watch it, the crazier it is to me. Just when you think about what you're actually doing, to get that thing to spin like that, you're one of a kind.
You had to like come in, and then I had to grab the front brakes to make it come up and around. You kind of like stab it real quick on the thing was like the start of it to get it going. But then you had to have your ass light on the seat so the back end would pop up. Like it was a process, a lot of wrecks. Like, don't feel bad if you're wrecking trying it, because I wrecked so many times trying that. Went through a lot of handlebars and levers and steering stems, like tons of wrecks.
Oh my gosh. So that's gotta be just about the most famous clip. Any of the Wavos videos, it's gotta be the most famous clip of yours, I would think. So do you have a favorite Wavos movie, Wavos segment? We got a bunch of questions about favorites, Wavos related things. So tell me your favorites of some of the Wavos stuff.
I mean, the last day was probably one of the best days.
Okay.
I have road quads, and then the worst.
Okay.
When I wanted that wreck I just told you about, but the whole day was awesome. We did the Elsinore shoot that day in the morning because we had a helicopter rented for the day. And then we went straight to Wes's house on the compound. I built this. I spent so much time building that compound there over the years. And I had my practice track there. It was on 20 acres at Wes's house. And I built it for years out there. And then we built this whole jump line, and pretty much just jumps all over the place. We only showed a little bit of it, but long jump line going through the whole property there. And that was probably my favorite scene from Wavos, just because of what to get it to there and how far we'd come. And, it was the last time riding with Caleb, I think, right there. It was just one of my favorite scenes from it. I also love the Alabama one.
Everybody loves that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that one. And then probably one of the first ones we ever did there at Tavis's at night. That was the night shoot where we were all jumping over the bonfire.
Yep.
That was That was pretty cool. Like there, we didn't, I think we might've had one construction generator light. The rest were all trucks parked on the runway.
Okay.
And pointing at the landing at night with a big bonfire. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, if anybody wants to see some early stuff, watch that again.
As the number one podcast in ATV racing, it's only right that we partner with the industry leaders in suspension tuning, Insert Impact Solutions. Impact Solutions is a full-service ATV and side-by-side suspension center specializing in the revalving and service of your motocross and off-road suspension. With over 25 years of elite-level knowledge, experience, and testing with riders of all ages and ability levels, Casey Greek, Jay Goble, and the Impact crew strive to exceed the client's expectations for service and setup. Impact Solutions is the official Elka Suspension Service Center of the United States, offering unmatched product knowledge and experience. Whether you're in need of service, parts, warranty, sales, or technical support, Impact Solutions has you covered. Head over to ImpactSolutionsATV.com or give them a call today.
We interrupt this program for a special news bulletin.
The following message is brought to you by Manscaped.com. The Manscaped engineering team has outdone themselves this time, creating the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, now available for purchase in the U.S. and Canada. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped, an official sponsor of the Digging Deep ATV MX podcast, with this exclusive offer of 20% off and free worldwide shipping with code DIGGINGDEEP20 at manscaped.com. I'm one of the first people to try the new 4.0 and I am blown away. This thing is next level. What sets this trimmer apart from all the rest? The Lawnmower 4.0 gives you the ability to turn the LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. It features a new multi-functioning on-off switch with travel lock for those of us who like to travel. And my favorite, the new trimmer allows you to customize your trim with four different guard lengths, an upgrade from its predecessor that only featured two. If you're listening, you know that good tools are a must, so wait no more to get the best tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with code DIGGINGDEEP20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com by using code DIGGINGDEEP20.
Hey everyone, this is Larry Mills, president of DP Brakes North America and proud partner of the Digging Deep ATV MX podcast. We at DP Brakes are a longtime supporter of ATV racing and the world leader in centered brake technology, dominating the ATV world for decades by supporting the best four-wheeled racers on the planet. This year's lineup includes Jeff Rastrelli, Mark Baldwin and Baldwin Motorsports, Ford Brothers Racing, Nick Janusa, and many more, including Mr. Digging Deep himself, Cody Jansen. Plus all the top 17 GNCC pros, such as seven-time champion Walker Fowler, Bryson Neal, Hunter Hart, Cole Richardson, Jared McClure, Adam McGill, and previous champion Chris Borch. These top riders continue to appreciate the high performance and impressive durability that their DP brakes have to offer. Products ultimately help place them on top of the podium week after week. DP brakes are available through www.dp-brakes.com, or you can purchase them through your local Parts Unlimited stocking dealer, or you can even message us, myself, Larry Mills, or DP Brakes on Instagram or Facebook. And if you have any questions about product or sponsorship support, please ask us. We are waiting for you. Join the best ATV riders in the world equipped with DP Brakes, and have a great year, everyone.
Nearing two decades into the brand's existence, Factory 43 is back and better than ever, continuing to make major waves in the ATV world. For the third consecutive season, Factory 43 is the official aluminum parts choice of the Phoenix Racing ATV team, providing their state-of-the-art Evo Nerf bars, MX-style front bumpers, and grab bars for two-time champ Joel Hetrick. If you're in the market to upgrade your Nerf bars, bumpers, or grab bars, head over to factory43atv.com to see their full line of industry-leading products available for all makes and models. Head over to factory43atv.com today.
Success in the ATV MX world is similar to what creates financial success as well. The right people, the right advice, and more importantly, hard work and the benefit of an ongoing relationship as situations change and adversity is experienced. Do you have the right financial advisor to help you reach your goals? Haymower Financial Group can create a personalized, goal-based plan to help your family prepare for whatever life brings. Call me, Scott Haymower, at Haymower Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, at 920-338-8150. That's 920-338-8150. Office is located in beautiful De Pere, Wisconsin, with registrations and clients nationwide.
we thought of Huevos no different than Krusty Demons or, you know, Terra Firma or any of that stuff. So it was just like, it was like you guys were too good for ATVs almost, you know, like, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. It was just that the product was so good, right? That, you know, it was the same. It was on the level of all that other stuff, that all those bigger, you know, big operations. And I feel like that's a credit to you guys for bringing that to life.
Yeah, that was the goal. We just wanted to make it bigger. Like, mm-hmm. We always wanted to make it bigger because it helped everybody if it got bigger and it got out there, mm-hmm. and made it more mainstream. That mm-hmm. was the main goal, that we didn't have social media or any of that stuff. So
right.
That was the way to get it out back then, is make these movies and get it out there. There was no YouTube, none of that stuff. So,
right. Yeah. So maybe this is a dumb question, but was there ever any chance of it making it to like another level as far as being at like, you know, maybe like bigger freestyle shows? Or, I mean, X Games might be a dumb thing to say here, but like, was there ever a chance it was going to make it to that? Was there ever a possibility of that?
I think there was, but, at the time when I was doing it, there wasn't enough riders, is what they kept telling us. Like Tess Sewell, who was in charge of it, we talked to him all the time about it, and mm-hmm. we just didn't have enough for a competition at their level yet. Like later, when Caleb and Derek and Colton, all those guys were doing it, they had enough. They did. Mm-hmm. Just for some reason, someone didn't pursue it. I don't know what happened, or quads fell off.
Sure.
Like, it seems like they were way more popular back then.
Yeah,
is why we had a chance, but we just didn't. The reasons we were told, which I understood, is we didn't have enough people
to
do it.
I got
you. Know, I wanted to do it. We were always trying to get into X Games for that. Like, that was what we wanted, to get it out there. That would have really brought it to the next level.
Of course. And the reason why I hesitated to say it is, you know, with ATVs, you know, or maybe it's motocross in general, but a non-educated, you know, person says, well, you know, why aren't you in X Games, or why aren't ATVs in X Games, or, you know, can you flip or whatever, you know, like that's what people say to people. Right. And, and that's why I didn't know if it was a dumb question, but I thought to myself, well, the level you guys were at, I knew, you know, it had to be at least on your guys' radar. So yeah, it's interesting to hear about that. So I'll ask one more current question, then we'll kind of reverse back and get back to your story. But tell me about Area 52. How did that project start? Because we got a zillion questions about that as well.
It's always my goal to have my own place. You know, we never really had, my dad had 2 acres back through my racing, which was mostly woods, which I had a little pit bike track and stuff I built when I broke my back. It was mm-hmm. really sweet pit bike track, but
okay.
You know, always wanted a place to ride. We'd drive by this area to go to the airport every time. We'd have to drive and you'd see all the rolling hills, and I'd just be like, you know, designing my jumps as we drive on the highway. You see them and you're just mm-hmm. always looking at the step ups, rollers. I was like, I'm going to live there someday. And we ended up going to Danimals to film out there, Danimals Domain. Mm-hmm. And that was really a game changer for me. Like, I full on, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to have a place like this someday. Like, that was full goal status, is where I was going. I wanted a place to build jumps like Danimals and my own compound. And finally got around to where we could do it. And I had a partner that bought the place with me.
Okay.
Ryan Whitley, another quad rider, one of my good friends growing up.
Sure.
Still a great friend. And we bought it together, lived here for 3 years together, and I ended up buying him out. And it was Area 52 through then, but we didn't really promote it that much. And that's when I got the dozer out here and started building the bigger stuff and everything, built the track. We just had a lot of natural hits to start first couple of years.
Okay.
And skid steer jumps and stuff. But
sure,
the real stuff came later when I had full reign to do what I wanted. I have pretty much a lifetime worth of projects here if I ever, you know, get time to do them. Like, I've lifetime worth. Mm-hmm. I just got this new track we're running here in town, and been concentrating most of my time and effort into this, the Finger Lake MX.
Yep.
And just trying to build it up. It's been a low budget, out of pocket thing so far. We're getting ready to start getting sponsors for it.
Okay.
And starting an ATV, UTV track here soon.
Nice.
Just right now, we got like a pit bike track, a beginner track for kids, quads and beginner bikes. And then we just did a Stasic bicycle area. And then there's a full moto track now. So we're getting there. It's slowly.
And where exactly is that located, Dana?
Red Bluff, California. It's about 2 hours north of Sacramento.
Okay. I knew you were up north somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun track.
Well, that's awesome. So circling back then to your story, we'll move away from the question, the listener questions a little bit and back to your story. You were another one of those guys whose career spanned through some of the raddest eras of ATV racing, the eras that saw probably like the most change in evolution. And it had to be cool to be a part of that. You know, you came in on the 250R like everyone else, and then you thrived in the hybrid era. You had some of the baddest ass hybrids that there ever were. And and then you were in the mix in the production era as well. So between the 250R days, the short-lived hybrid era, and then the dawn of the production time period. Did you have a favorite era or period that you were a part of there?
Yeah. I mean, I love the Walsh. You know, I rode the Lagers first with a Yamaha motor, and then hooking up with Mike, that was the biggest danger. And what a great guy and a great friend. Like, me and Mike hit it off so well, and he helped me out. Like, I could not have done it without Mike. You know, I was on my own race team at that time, and Mike took me in, and he definitely made it possible what we were doing. And it was awesome. We had a lot of good times. Mike, I ended up pulling his bike around to a lot of the races, the stadium races and stuff. And we'd always pit together. Like, I love that guy. Like, Mike, definitely one of my best friends from racing, him and Jason Luberg.
Yeah, exactly. I love Mike Walsh too, man. I figured that was going to be the era you said. Your machines were so dialed during that time, those CRF hybrids. But yeah, so I wanted to ask you, this kind of bleeds into this next question. I wanted to ask you about your favorite quad. But first, I kind of want to, before just having you say it, because you're going to say that CRF hybrid, I'm sure. I want you to be able to go through some of the notable ones and have you tell me about them a little bit or what you liked about them, starting with those legendary NACS 250Rs. I think I didn't say it before, but I think the entire ATV industry is still crushing on those bad boys.
Yeah, I still have it. I have all of them.
Do you really?
Any championship bike I kept, and then I kept my last race bike, the Suzuki.
Okay.
So the 06 Suzuki I kept, but I have that original Doug Gust bike we bought. I still have that bike sitting at my dad's house right now.
Like, I love
that bike. It was awesome. I ended up having I borrowed a chassis and stuff for freestyle for a while.
Okay.
And that was kind of the second one. And then we ended up getting another one. So I had two bikes there for a while that would be like my practice bike. And, but I kept this one. This is the one I won the A class on. So I kept it, and, I love it. I actually am going to do a kind of show the rebuild of that bike here soon. So yeah, it's going to get a complete restoration.
That's amazing. Soon. That's a piece of history, you know, with how amazing those things are. That's a piece of history.
Yeah, definitely. It had a Terry Varner one-off exhaust on it and stuff. Like, it was built for a Doug, supposedly.
Oh,
that's a story Sean gave me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's incredible. Like I said, to this day, I mean, I think so many of us drool when we see those things. So that's incredible. So then that 250R based, you know, wall CRF hybrid, like I said, I'm sure that's your favorite, but those things were iconic.
Yeah, no, I love that thing. That bike was just the best by far. I ended up, I ran Tom's motors and Tom stuff forever. And I ended up switching, exhaust. White Brothers sponsored me for a while. So I got that exhaust. It's what it's got on right now is a carbon fiber.
Oh, White
Brothers.
Those are so sweet. Those are so
Donnie
sweet.
Luce. Old yes. Donnie.
Yep.
Donnie was the man back then. He helped me out a lot. We did a lot of testing with them there in Taos and trying to make it. He was doing one-off exhaust for this hybrid bike. You know, it wasn't even anything they could sell until I got a production bike. And then they started selling Yamaha stuff that I ran, but that's what I ran for the rest of my career is the White Brothers stuff. Yeah. I like those. I like Tom's too. Just Tom's was so loud.
Oh my God. I know.
So loud. Like, you could rattle the guy in front of you with Tom's. You could mess him up and make a mistake so bad. Just coming in and revving that thing up. It was funny.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, that was predictable that it was going to be that, you know, that loud when the thing was as tiny as it was.
This in the stadiums, they were so loud. I can't believe they even let us run them in there.
Oh my gosh. That is wild. Yeah. Everybody is hard of hearing nowadays because of those things. And so then after that, obviously came the YFZ. And I guess the YFZ that I think of with you, I think of the yellow and black one. Those are the ones that, that come to mind for me. So what was that like? You know, obviously that was a cool era for ATV racing when the factories got back into it and there was production quads. So what was that era like to be a part of?
I liked it. It was cool because it brought everybody kind of on a more even playing field for a while until the factories got too far into it, you know, then Suzuki, whoever was the guys, they had way different bike motor and stuff than us, you know, even though I was on the Yoshimura motor there at the end, I don't think it was the same motor they had, like that kind of thing, like the mapping and stuff. Like it just got kind of weird towards the end, but that Yamaha, I would put it up against anything back then. Like that, that was one of the, that was definitely the best production bike I rode was those Yamahas.
Yeah.
You know, I love that bike. I wish I still had it.
Well, I'm sure that, so you're comparing, you know, the Suzuki that you had to the Suzuki that the factory guys had. I'm sure that that's what, I'm sure that that's what Corey Ellis was thinking when he was on a Z400 and you were on your CRF hybrid.
No, he definitely brought a knife to a gunfight on that one, but he's still, he's Corey Ellis. He could have rode a three wheeler.
I know.
Yeah. He's like John Natale. Those guys. John Kittle rode a three-wheeler at any of the races and probably still podiumed.
I know. Yeah, there's just no quitting those guys. It's wild. So next would have came – so after the Yamaha would have came the Suzuki, right? And then I literally have written in my notes, I thought your last pro race, your last pro motocross race came on an LTR in 2006 at WPSA, and we kind of already talked about that. That was the case.
Yep. Yeah, Englishtown.
That
was the last one. I decided that day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I decided that day after the race. Like, there's a couple things that went on. I won't get into it, but I just said, I'm not coming back.
Okay.
Like, the way the promoters and stuff were dealing with us and everything and some of the other people there, I just said, peace. You know, I'm going to go do UTVs and race out west. I just had a really bad taste in my mouth after that for what was happening there.
Okay.
And, you know, I just... That's not all I got to say about that. I'd love to go back now. It looks like it's a lot better, you know?
Yeah.
I'd really like to go ride. I just need a new bike. Need a Yamaha. Need to get on the Blue Crew with you.
Insurance. It's not something everyone likes to talk about, but let's face it. If you race motocross, it's something you should have. Integrative Financial Concepts is an independent financial service and insurance firm who offers moto-friendly insurance and helps out riders like Nick Janusa, Jeffrey Rastrelli, and Joel Hetrick gain confidence on the track. With their unique safe-to-race and safe-to-ride programs, if you qualify, they have the ability to offer life insurance with living benefits to those who ride. With these living benefits, you may have the ability to access a portion of your life insurance policy while you're still living for things like cancer, heart attack, stroke, or chronic illness. They can also help with many other things, such as home, auto, motorhome, and trailer insurance, as well as college planning, special needs planning, payroll processing, as well as group health benefits for your business. So whether something happens on or off the track, Integrative Financial Concepts has you covered. With their complimentary one-on-one appointments, what are you waiting for? Reach out to Mike Daniele at Daniele underscore Michael at nlgroupmail.com today and see how Integrated Financial Concepts can help you. Living benefit riders are supplemental benefits that can be added to a life insurance policy and are not suitable unless you have the need for life insurance. Riders are optional and may require additional premium and may not be available in all states or on all products. This is not a solicitation for any specific insurance policy.
Just like the sport of ATV motocross as a whole, our Digging Deep community is brought together by the love for racing that we all share. Our sport is compiled of many great people, and leading that charge is the Launderville family at Launderville Steel Enterprises and Concrete Supply. This racing-owned family business is a steel and concrete supplier serving the entire United States. Launderville Steel is a full-service steel supplier of new and surplus steel, aluminum, and stainless steel products headlined by their 4130 chromoly tubing and plate used in the building of chassis for ATVs and UTVs, off-road truck racing, late model dirt and pro tractor pulling series, drag racing, and more. Launderville Steel loves their racing just as much as we do, but don't forget about their concrete division as well. With over 25 years of experience, the concrete division can supply everything you need to complete your next business or personal project. Their central Midwest location enables LSE to easily serve customers across the United States.
For a quote, additional info, answers to more of your questions, or to talk a little racing, head over to LaundervilleSteel.com or give them a call today. We are proud to be partnered with yet another racer-owned company. Thank you, Launderville Steel Enterprises and Concrete Supply. Here at Digging Deep, we have an obvious passion for ATVs and pridefully enjoy sharing the sport's history. Since 2019, when the podcast was born, we've been working to partner with individuals who share our passion, but one man and his vision had been missing from our partnership group. Until now. When it comes to the sport's history, the hallowed grounds of Binky's Forever ATC Museum has it all. Binky Tapscott's mind-blowing collection of three- and four-wheelers has preserved history by spanning all makes and models from Honda three-wheelers in chronological order to unique builds that shaped ATV racing as we know it, like Doug Gust's iconic DRZ-powered hybrid thumper and everything in between. There's no denying Binky's passion, a passion that we certainly relate to here at Digging Deep. Binky's goal is to share his amazing collection with fellow enthusiasts by making his prized possessions accessible to the public via scheduled visits. Follow Forever ATC Museum on Facebook and watch foreveratc.com for further updates on possibly getting a chance to see Binky's Forever ATC Museum for yourself. We are proud to welcome Binky's Forever ATC Museum to the Digging Deep family. Evans Waterless Power Sports Coolant. The best power sports coolant on the market, Evans prevents overheating and boil over so you need not worry about harming your engine or suffering a premature end to your ride no matter what the conditions. Designed for use in ATVs, UTVs, motorcycles, and other power sports equipment, when conditions are at their worst, Evans is at its best. Upgrade to Evans now to avoid overheating and boil over next time you hit the track or trail. Use discount code DIGGINGDEEP20 at checkout to save at evanscoolant.com. Thanks for listening, and remember to support our partners. Now back to the show. Dana Creech here on the Digging Deep ATVMX podcast, and we resume our conversation talking about 2007 and your new partnership with Polaris.
Ended up, you know, getting the deal with the UTVs, but it was also a quad package deal.
Okay.
Which I needed a quad sponsor at that time anyways, and I ended up racing those at the quad cross and everything. And they were good quads. They just they needed more parts for them and stuff. It was hard to get parts for those bikes.
Okay.
You know, the aftermarket stuff that we needed. You know, I had Lone Star A-arms and stuff, but that was about it, you know, and shocks.
Sure.
On that bike. It ended up, I'll say it now, but I ended up riding the 525 with the 450 plastic at the races.
Had to do it.
Like, if I didn't have 450 motor work, I think Dan still got the motor that we sent him to get built. Like, it just never came back. So I was just getting smoked
right
on there. I couldn't keep up. So I was like, forget it. I was like, I'm going to put the plastic on this one.
Uh-huh.
And just because it was the same bike, just different top end pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I started riding the 525 and being kind of competitive
okay
on there and being able to hang with them on that. But okay. Yeah, the stock 450 just wasn't hanging with the race motors. And I didn't have race motor yet.
I'm sure not. Like you said, you had to be a valuable asset to Polaris.
Yeah, it went really good. We had a great relationship. I was racing all the stuff out there, ended up winning the series at the quad cross against all the UTVs. I got the first Razor S800 and was waxing them on a stock one against everybody and their built ones. And that's when I got hurt there. I got hurt so bad that I couldn't do anything for over a year.
Right.
And ended up losing the whole deal with them.
Yeah. Everything happens for a reason. So the one thing we didn't touch on, I let 2005 go without touching on this, was the supermoto stuff. You were doing some of the supermoto stuff. That would have been on the Yamaha. So yeah, that would have been 2005-ish. Yep. And man, did that look like a blast. That looked like such a great time.
It was a really good time. I ended up doing a few of the races on those and was doing really good at it. And then I was wearing shift moto gear and not the leathers. And it was a big mistake. I learned it the wrong way, the hard way. And I yard sailed that thing fourth gear. It high sided on me and I skidded probably 200 feet on. You know, I was just shredded, shredded. I didn't even get out of my gear. I think I might have taken my shirt off and just went in my trailer and laid down. My dog, my pit bull back then, sat there and licked my wounds to get the gravel out pretty much.
Oh, like, my God.
I was just wrecked. And that was last supermoto for me. I did it in the UTVs after that. But
okay.
I was, definitely wanted a cage after that one. It was really fun though.
That's wild because I saw a picture of it when I was, you know, putting together some of my info here and I like literally double taked. I'm like, man, he's wearing moto gear. Like,
yeah, did you see the one where the bike's way up in the air and I'm like on the ground sliding? That's it.
Yeah.
It hit one of those islands. It hit one of those parking lot islands and oh my God, it was bad. I flew over the island luckily, but yeah.
Oh my God. That's wild.
It destroyed me. So, the worst road rash I've ever had.
And like I said, I thought to myself, I'm like, man, if it were to go bad, you do not want moto gear on. And then to hear about that is crazy.
It was cool. And it was, I like that more than TT. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that. Like, yeah, it was funner than TT.
Yeah. Yeah. It was short lived, you know, for people who don't know what we're talking about with the, you know, the asphalt kind of road course with a little bit of moto mixed in was really cool. But it was short lived.
I was still into racing, just not that into racing. I like having more fun riding. Like, I'd much rather do what I'm doing now than racing. Like, I definitely don't ever want to race unless it's with a steering wheel, probably, or maybe come back and do some quad races in the 40 plus or something.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think I should be riding pro class or anything, because I don't have the laps in me. But I think it definitely bothers me. It still bothers me. I wish I would have been able to keep racing and doing it, but you know, it is what it is. I still love everything happens for a reason. I probably wouldn't be right here at this place, you know, yet if I kept doing it.
Right.
Because you weren't making the money that you needed to hardly survive. Like, I made enough money to go to the next race racing, but I wasn't getting rich doing it. I had the Dana Creech Racing, which was doing pretty good, that helped support it, and my dad's body shop paying for gas for the truck and helping buy parts and stuff for me. But, you know, you weren't getting rich riding a quad. I don't know anybody who did. Maybe all those Suzuki factory guys got a little bit of money, but still they're not, none of that's left over. I guarantee it now. They're doing something else. You know, I don't know anybody that really made a ton of money racing quads. So I had to get real, think about life and what I wanted to do. And, you know, I wanted to do some things other than just racing. And if you're going to be competitive, that's all you get to do is that, which was a privilege. And I loved it, but, you know, there was a lot more to do that I had plans on doing.
Right. Well, I think that's what makes your path so cool, is that you got to do just about everything, you know, and that's kind of where I was going with that is, you know, you weren't like the lineup for, like you said, for a decade or decade and a half, just racing every weekend. You did everything from, you know, freestyle to all the free riding filming stuff, to all these cool videos, to racing, to TT, to supermoto, to UTVs, and all the stuff you did. I just think that's what makes your career so cool, is you get, like, there's nothing that you didn't get to do.
Yeah. The monster trucks. You didn't say that. That was,
you're right.
I've ever done.
Yes,
that's probably
the
funnest thing I've ever done is monster trucks.
Okay.
That was definitely a goal all throughout it, 'cause we were at all those stadium races with them.
Yeah.
I actually traded them to do free show at intermission freestyle. I was always doing freestyle shows at the intermissions.
Okay.
At those in front of the whole crowd by myself.
Yep.
I think John Italy went out there one time with me in Georgia and did it. And, you know, I traded because they didn't have money. They didn't have a budget for it, but Dan still wanted me to do it. So I was like, all right, him and Roy Jensen. I was like, I want to drive Gravedigger. It doesn't have to be at a show, but I want to drive Gravedigger. Like, and I'll do this. And like, okay, well, took them a while and they got back to me. Okay. So then it was back all the way past ATV race. And I was in Costa Rica at a monster jam with the UTVs down there we were doing. And I got with the head guys, Bill and Mike and them, and talked to them. I was like, hey, you guys still owe me a drive in Gravedigger. Like, you guys promised me. I was like, Roy Jensen, CEO, him, Dan was there, Dan Allen.
Okay.
I was like, you guys promised me a ride in this thing. And it was about 2 years later, they called me like, hey, we got a test day coming up. We want you to come out to North Carolina, and did that with a few girls that were there, like Tara Dakitas and a couple other girls. It was just, I was the only guy doing it, because all they wanted was women to come into that sport at that time.
Yeah.
But, okay. I'd hammered them on it. And then it took about a year or two after that, and they called me for a show like, hey, like, you ready? I was like, what? Like, yeah, you're going to San Antonio. It's a TV show, 2-day event. You're driving Monster Mutt. I was like, okay. So yeah, first time driving it in 2 years since that practice day was at a TV show.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was kind of got thrown to the wolves in that one. And it was awesome. Every time I got in a monster truck, it was the coolest thing I ever did.
That's awesome. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me, Dana, because you just come off as one of those guys that can, you know, like do anything. Like you can just figure it out, right? Or you know, just be good at anything. Like that's how I've always thought of you.
Yeah, I had to figure it out. Luckily, I had Damon Bradshaw as my teammate in the truck.
Okay.
And I got to learn from him a lot and ask him questions, like, because he was, as I could see back then, he was the most calculated and best truck control I've seen out of anybody. Like he would go up, tap the brakes and downside it like a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Like Damon had it down. And like, I picked his brain and watched him, and I got lucky that I was with him the first year. I ended up getting fired for over driving. So hope
what
they only want a few winners is what it was back then. I don't know what it is now, if it's changed, but if you didn't have red headlights, you weren't supposed to go for it and stuff. And I honestly wanted a race instead of freestyle. I thought racing was a go ahead. You know, we always competed at racing, I thought, but it was in Europe. We were in England and I won racing, and I got a call next week saying I was done pretty much. I got a warning because at a Chicago show, I ended up done this jammer and my wheel flew off. I won like 4 out of 5 shows that weekend at an arena.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me a warning written thing saying, if you do it again, you're fired immediately, kind of thing. And I got suspended for 1 week. That was the first time that ever happened. And they kind of made an example out of me, is what it seemed like.
Seriously.
And it was really weird. It's kind of a really political scene there too. You know, I came in the same year as Ryan Anderson and stuff, and we were in the same truck, and you know, I he was awesome. He did great. I thought I was doing good, but I just I got green light a few times when they're having a bad show to go hammer down, do what you want. But it was a miscommunication as far as I can see it. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to win that race. and I was excited. I did a celebration, did some donuts, jumped the step up at the end, went parked it. And I think I got yelled at really good right then. So okay. Freestyle, I laid down just, I didn't want to piss anybody off at freestyle. And that was my last show. I actually went and did one for a private company and the truck broke first jump at San Antonio or Houston after that.
Oh my gosh.
I just got a call this year to go drive a truck, which I might get to do. I was just busy with all this stuff going on.
Okay.
I said, and the track starting, I just said, please keep me in mind. I'll be calling you here soon.
Yeah.
Cause he bought some trucks. Like I really want to do it again. I just don't think I could do the whole series or drive the semi and stuff. Like I'd like to just come in and do a few events would be amazing.
Yeah. There you go.
Nothing like driving a monster truck. If you ever get a chance, do it.
You can hear the excitement in your voice.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. So let's kind of tie some of this up then. Let me ask you what you would consider your career highlight.
I would say stadium series, winning the championship that year. Like that meant a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had good racers out there with me, Tim Farr, Corey Ellis, Mike Walsh, Keith Little. I forget who else was out there, but it was a really good year. I like the stadium stuff more than the Nationals. Like that's what I really like to do. I just thought that had a big future. I wish they would have kept that going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they did it 1 year after that, or maybe two. I ended up rolling my truck. I was pretty young when that happened. I ended up rolling my truck or something, had to sit the year out on one of the years because my dad said I couldn't race until I got my truck fixed. He was pretty mad about me rolling my Tacoma. It was at lunch break for school.
Okay.
And I ended up total in my Tacoma. And we have a body shop. That's what our family did. So I had to fix my truck before I could go racing again.
Oh, and, my gosh.
That happened. That was big, big learning lesson for me. And then I think I was hurt with the broken leg. I ended up having a shifting fork bend on my dirt bike. I put the motor out of my race bike back in the dirt bike, and I was practicing on that, and went from second to third, and it went to neutral, and I had to jump off and broke my leg right before the season. So I set out the year Natale won it.
Okay.
I think that was the last year they did it.
That would have been 05. So what year did you win it, Dana? Was that like 03?
either 03 was the year I came back from breaking my back. Okay. That was the first thing I did was went to that series and I won it.
Okay. And that was on the
CRF. I set out a year.
That was on the CRF.
It was on the Walsh.
Yeah.
Yep. On the Walsh.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to ask you, and that was one of the last things here on my list of things to touch on is the stadium stuff. And I was going to ask you what made you so good at those, because I always remembered you being a force at the, you know, at the pro quad stadium events there.
They were more technical. Like I liked anything technical, man, anything good. I was always campaigned for the Nationals to do a pro section, you know, nobody else had to ride because they always wanted it to be for everybody. I was like, put a pro section in.
Right.
They never would. Like, I mean, that Great Outdoor Games was about the closest thing to that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just, maybe because it was more technical or because there was so many people there cheering. I don't know. I mean, I really like the indoors more than the outdoors. I'll tell you that.
You know, maybe it makes
probably why.
Maybe it makes sense too, because you were kind of an entertainer, you know, like with the, you know, with the freestyle stuff and whatever, right? Like the crowds. I mean, maybe that's why.
Yep. Maybe. Yep. It's something about it. I always had a passion for the indoor stuff and Supercross. Yeah. Like we actually, that year we got to ride day after Supercross on their track
at Anaheim,
the amateur day.
Yeah.
Yeah. The amateur day and stuff. That was awesome. I wish we could have done a lot more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like I was hoping it was going to go that direction. Mm-hmm. It just didn't pan out for us there either. Like quad just, we got shut down on a lot of stuff at the end of my career there.
Oh yeah. So what about one singular race? Like, do you have one race that stands out in your mind or a battle maybe, or anything like that? Anything that comes to mind there?
There's definitely a few, or like me and Keith and Corey were just battling it out, probably San Diego, maybe.
Okay.
I think we had pretty good battles there. Really good, you know, swapping it back and forth. Keith definitely was swapping back and forth with me. And then Corey would be right there and get one of us and we'd pass back and forth. Like,
okay.
It was fun. It was just so quick and fast, everything you're doing. Instead of, you know, a 20 minute moto plus two, it was a lot quicker thing. So it was a sprint the whole time you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that was just such a cool era for the sport. Okay. So, do you have someone who you'd consider like your fiercest rival or like a toughest competitor? Did you find yourself battling with one particular guy all the time? Like, who comes to mind if I propose that question to you?
Well, I mean, for stadium, it would have been Corey and Keith, I'd say, and Tim.
Okay.
Those guys, like, you know, and it was just a privilege to race against Tim. Tim was a man, you know, always looked up to him. You know, I looked up to Corey too, but before Corey, it was definitely and always above Corey. Sorry, Corey, but Tim has a history. You know, Tim was a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, racing with him, Doug, all those guys, that was pretty awesome. You know, I just, I'd say the most times we had to battle it out was with Corey, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, we'd always find each other.
Okay. Well, I feel like everybody's got that guy, you know, that you just can't get away from. And for you, you know, there was so many legends. Like you raced all the most legendary guys in the sport. It's gotta be like cool that you got to do that. Also, you had to race the gnarliest guys, but you were one of those guys too.
Yeah. It was definitely a privilege to get to race with all my heroes. Like, they weren't out yet when I got in. I was pretty happy about that. Still happy that I got to race with most of the guys I got to watch. Gary's about the only one I didn't get to race with, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's amazing. So you got to do all this different stuff, you know, in racing, you know, you got to race and freestyle, supermoto, all the stuff we touched on, all these different disciplines and everything in between. So what motivated you, like, throughout all that time, what motivated you?
Girls? I just always wanted to do it. Like, I had the pictures all over my walls growing up. You know, I had the Huevos 1 and 2, you know, I was like, I can do that. Like, I seen those guys on there. I was like, we need to get a hold of this guy. I'm going to do this. Like, that's like, we were already doing the tricks they were doing, you know, at Tavis's. Just, you know, we didn't know who to talk to and there was no internet. Like, you had to get their phone number somehow.
Right.
To find them. Like, I don't even know about, definitely didn't have an email back then, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, none of that stuff. So it was getting to the right place at the right time, and getting seen was about the best way. I mean, it was just, I wanted to make it in that. And that was kind of my motivation.
I remember like being young and it was like, it wasn't even a question. It was like, this is what we did. Like, this is what we, this is what we love to do. Like, this is, this like made me who I was, right? Like, that's just what you chose to do every single day. So it's funny how that works. That's almost what makes the path that you, you know, made for yourself so cool. You had to make your path and you made it, and it was epic. You know, it was just, it's crazy how it all worked out.
Yeah. I was definitely blessed. I definitely appreciate everybody who helped me. Definitely couldn't have done it without them. You know, it was amazing. Good ride. It was a good ride.
Right. You were in such a rad era of the sport too. And then fast forwarding to stuff today, do you follow like current ATV motocross at all? Like, do you stay stay up to date with what's going on and stuff like that? You monitor it a little bit.
Yep. I do. Definitely. I mean, I follow some of the guys and I watch some of the races. I don't watch them all, but I definitely watch some of the races on there. I went to Unadilla in 2018 when my son was born.
Okay. Sure.
I went out there and watched that race. I'd like to go to some more. I really want to go to Daytona. Like, that would maybe next year, if I get in better shape, get my shoulder fixed in time, I'd like to go to Daytona.
There you go.
That'd be a fun one. Like, we never got to do that one. And that seems pretty awesome, prestigious one that I'd like to put on the list.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of those things, like, just to, you know, you belong at the races, you know, like, I feel like, you know, there's just a buzz when legends show up to the races nowadays. And you're obviously, you know, that you would be one of them. If you showed up, you were one of them when you showed up in 2018. And it's funny because when you and I were messaging back and forth last week, and I told you that multiple people stopped me at the Minneapolis Supercross to ask when we were going to get you on the show, cause I feel like we've been teasing it for a while and trying to make it happen for a while. And your response was that it was, you know, it was funny that you still had some fans out there somewhere. I mean, I'm here to tell you that, you know, your legend absolutely lives on. You know, Dana Creech, the name will always be iconic. I feel like, you know, everybody comes out of the woodworks. You could tell by the people interacting with our posts the last couple of days. You know, I'm here to tell you that you're always going to be a legend in ATV racing. Like, your legacy isn't going anywhere. And so I got to ask you then, tell me how you want to be remembered in the sport. Like, what kind of legacy do you want people to remember you for in ATV racing?
I mean, I always tried to treat my fans right. And always have time for them. That was what I tried to do. And cause I remember when I was there, I remember going up to Corey Ellis and how he gave me time there at the stadium race, like even other racers and stuff. Like, always tried to give the time, you know, like, and be there, be real and not be too good for them. Like, that was kind of it. And, you know, maybe remembered for being able to always trying to go for it. You know, I was always trying to do something that someone couldn't. That was kind of my goal. I'd rather do that than win the race. You know, that was it.
I feel like that's stuck with you for sure. And you might have not heard it. A couple episodes ago, we had Sam Rowe on, and he talked about that he was bummed because he was a little boy, maybe his first national. And he said he was bummed because, you know, he didn't make the motos, didn't qualify or whatever. He was all down in the dumps. And then he got to meet you, and his whole weekend was made. It was like he won the races because he got to meet you. And it's just cool. I mean, I truly believe that that's how you're remembered. People remember you as somebody like that to this day, that you were just such a down-to-earth, humble, awesome guy. Yet on an ATV, you were gnarly. Like, that's how I feel like you're always going to be remembered.
That's good. That's kind of what I went for. I always wanted to be just real and, you know, there, take the time to sign the autographs till they're gone, and just took time for anybody. You know, that was what I always tried to do. I didn't want to be the guy that said no kind of thing. And you know, I had a lot of friends. I remember DJ. He's always on your guys' thing talking and stuff. Like, DJ was just a little redhead guy. He was at our trailer every weekend hanging out. Like, like, I definitely remember all the guys and stuff. Like, I miss it. You know, it was a great experience. I love the whole community and would definitely love to come back there and do some stuff with the ATVs or help promote it. Like, I would like to help make it better somehow, even if it was with my place here, doing some more videos and stuff. Like, we have a lot of opportunity here to expose quads. I think that's why I've been I've been definitely throwing it in Donnie's ear. Don't think I'm not. Like he knows.
Good.
So
good.
I would ride a quad. I just don't trust my quads without being completely rebuilt. Like right. They're better just to hang, you know. Like I rode my Suzuki a couple years back out here when I got a flat tire on my dirt bike.
Okay.
And I was riding it back. I did some of the jumps, and there's some stuff on my Instagram where I was jumping it and whipping it. Mm-hmm. But I was coming back, and I was hitting this fourth gear jump, and I was coming back to hit it again, and fuel started spraying everywhere. My fuel line rotted and off the fuel injector and blew fuel all over. Like I was like, oh, I was like, put this thing away.
Yeah.
I was like, it needs complete rebuild before I ever ride it again.
Right.
Like, that kind of thing. Like I didn't trust it. I rode my Walsh a couple times, and that's on my Instagram as well. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
It feels so low, the old bikes like that.
I'm
like,
sure.
We rode them so low compared to the Suzuki or the Yamahas and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of weird. And I'm used to a dirt bike now.
Right.
So definitely low. And it was cool. It felt natural just getting on a quad. I mean, I always said if I could jump it on a dirt bike, I'd definitely jump it on a quad and stuff. So I had to back that up not too long ago. And the getters and JR and all them came out and they weren't jumping one of the jumps. So I told them that they definitely could. So I went out and did it on this one after they left.
That's awesome. Dana, you'll always have a home in the ATV community, the ATV racing community. You'll always have a home here. And it's funny, you know, touching on DJ, I was so jealous when I was a kid, you know, because he knew you, you know, and I felt like whenever DJ was around, you know, Dana's name would come up, and I was so pissed that he knew you and I didn't know you. It's so funny to think to back then, but
that's funny.
But yeah,
he was always, he was at our trailer every weekend, hanging out in between the races. DJ always there.
Yeah.
It's cool to see where he's at now and what they're accomplished. I follow his Rocket Machine now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty
yeah.
awesome. He's one of the top builders. I mean,
exactly.
I'm definitely not surprised that he's still completely involved in the industry.
Exactly. Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool to have those people that have roots. You know, that's one of the things that I wanted to touch on. You know, I'm glad that we've been able to tell that about DJ, because he's not just a guy.
Yeah.
Like he's been doing it since
the
dude was, you know, like you said, like he was since he was three feet tall.
Yeah. Little dude.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's
awesome. Yeah. I remember him. I wouldn't even recognize him other than his Instagram now. He's a grown man now.
Right. Yeah. It's wild. Yeah,
pretty crazy.
Man, Dana, you're an absolute legend. I can't thank you enough for being here with me. This has been a dream come true for me. And I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface, you know. But I do want to get Wes on for one of these. I want to get Wes Miller on for one of these episodes. And I'd love if you'd come back and join us for it. That would be a lot of fun.
That'd be cool. We'd probably have some good stories to say.
Hell yeah.
Some that shouldn't be said, but definitely.
Hell yeah.
Definitely some good stories with Wes. We did so much, and you know, definitely nobody would have known near as much about me if it wasn't for Wes.
Right.
You know, and him giving me the opportunities, and pretty much he'd be gone half the year and I lived at his house. Like I took care of that. I was there. It was kind of my house at times there. That, like, I don't know if you ever seen his house, but it was a ridiculous house at the end down there in Fallbrook where we had the track.
Okay.
And I did what I wanted there, the dirt and design stuff. He'd come home and be like, what the hell?
Living the dream.
It's okay. It's okay, man. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. We're going to have to plan on that. That would be epic. And
I'm down.
Yeah, let's do it. Dana, you're a legend. Like I said, I'm so happy, so honored to be able to have you here and share this time with you. I look forward to doing this again. And man, I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And it was good talking to you. Hopefully we'll see you guys at some of the races.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'd like to bring my son out.
Yeah, stay safe, stay well, stay happy. And until next time, we'll see you soon.
Yep. Thank you.
I'm Cody Jansen. He's Dana Creech. And we're signing off on the Digging Deep ATV MX podcast. Thanks, pal. Freaking pinch me, man. That guy is a living legend. I have to thank Bronco ATV and UTV Components for bringing you our featured guest tonight. Major thanks to said guest, Dana Creech. You're the man. Thanks to Dallas Jansen, my producer, my brother, for all his hard work. Thanks to Brooke and AMA official Harv Whipple. Thanks to all of our donors. You know who you are. We appreciate you so much. Thanks to all of our partners, CST Tires. Go to shop.csttires.com today. Yamaha, thanks to Blue Crew.
SSI decals, DID racing chain, Namira Technologies, Bronco ATV and UTV components, Impact Solutions, Launderville Steel Enterprises and Concrete Supply, the financial advice of the Haymauer Financial Group, Forworks Carbon, DP Brakes, Factory 43, Integrated Financial Concepts and their Safe to Race and Safe to Ride insurance programs, Binky's Forever ATC Museum, Evans Waterless Power Sports Coolant, and Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with code DIGGINGDEEP20 at manscaped.com. Support the brands that support our show, and don't forget to use those codes to save. Find it all on our website, and be sure to click those Rocky Mountain ATV MC and Amazon banners for all your gear and parts needs, everyday needs, and to help us out. And most of all, thanks to you guys for listening. Our show merchandise is available at shop.diggingdeepatvmx.com, so check that out. And if you're looking for an easy way to help support us, visit our website and click the Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee buttons. This allows you to set up a one-time or monthly contribution to support our efforts. Give us a call using our voicemail line. Give us your reaction to the show, the races, and or everything in between so we can play them on the show and react to what you have to say. That number is 920-569-3519. We want to hear from you, so give us a call. Follow the show on social media, Digging Deep ATVMX Podcast, and myself, Cody Jansen. For additional content, coverage, and more fun stuff, is the 2022 season is set to begin. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. Wherever you find podcasts, you'll find the Digging Deep ATVMX Podcast. All episodes, additional podcast providers, sponsor links and discount codes, show merchandise, fantasy info, and more can all be found on our website, diggingdeepatvmx.com, so check that out today. The Digging Deep ATVMX Fantasy season is finally here. Sign up for ATV Fantasy today. Get in on the prizes, the bragging rights, and all the fun. Winner of Digging Deep ATVMX Fantasy at Daytona is going to earn themselves a brand new pair of riding gear. So head over to ATVFantasy.com to sign up now. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag on my ATV Fantasy team for Daytona just quite yet. You'll have to monitor social media for that. But I will say, I think Joel Hetrick's going to do it this year. I think he's going to get over the hump. I think he's going to win Daytona. And guys, I go with him every year. I think Chad Wienan's going to win the championship. It's going to be a fun season. I can't wait to see it all play out. And I can't wait to break it down race by race right here on the Digging Deep ATVMX Podcast. But again, visit ATVFantasy.com to get signed up. You won't regret it. Be a friend. Tell a friend. Please download, subscribe, rate, review, and share. And with that, for Dana Creech, Brooke Catherine, Dallas Jansen, and I'm your host, Cody Jansen, thanks for listening and making us the number one podcast in ATV racing with over 130,000 downloads monthly in 80 total countries. Until next time, thanks for joining us and digging deep with the stars of ATV Motocross. See you next week.
Things are crashing and burning here at the Digging Deep Podcast, much like the Titanic.
Those guys were hauling ass, for real.
I remember watching Doug Guss, I don't know who it was, Steel City, running the same times Friday afternoon as James Stewart was on Sunday back then. It was mental. I've never seen quads go that fast.
Quadlers are freaking gnarly.